You've probably heard about the movie Overcomer, but you may not know that there are a few books and Bible studies inspired by the film. One is called Defined by Alex Kendrick and Stephen Kendrick, which is a book and Bible study based on insights from the book of Ephesians. Filled with personal stories and practical wisdom, Defined will challenge you to let the one who knows you best be the one who guides your heart the most. Another book for teens and young women is called Radiant by best-selling author and co-star of Overcomer, Priscilla Shire. For these teen girls, there's also the Defined Bible Study, an invitation for teen girls and young women to enjoy a candid conversation on identity with Priscilla Shire. You can find these books and Bible studies at lifeway.com/overcomer.
Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to another episode of the Group Answers Podcast Show. I'm Brian Daniel, and as always here, always with Chris Surratt.
Yeah, it's good to be somewhere always.
That's right. So we are winding down the fall season. We're just a few days away from October, but that's not when we are recording. And I wanted
don't
to
give secrets.
I think everybody knows.
You just ruined the magic.
I think we've probably tripped up enough that everybody out there
that's
knows.
That's probably true, yeah.
But Chris, I saw the Tarantino movie this week.
I saw it too.
And you've seen it, and how'd you feel?
Are we allowed to talk about the fact that we went to an R-rated movie?
Well, we didn't. Let's just talk about what other people may have said.
Hypothetically. I mean, we will say it was R for Tarantino violence.
It may have been my first R-rated movie.
You know what? I'm a Tarantino fan. I like his movies, but this was not my favorite. It was a little drawn out, a little self-indulgent, a little inside Hollywood, but
yeah. Well, maybe we can pick up post-show.
There
we can
go.
Do that.
There
we can go ahead. Since we have in-studio guests
yes.
during this episode, we can go ahead and ring them in.
This is exciting. We have a return guest, Heather Zimple. Heather, you have been on here at least a couple times.
I have. Thanks so much for having me back.
Yeah. Do we have a three-timer jacket yet?
I think you've got to be five before you get the blazer.
Okay. We'll get you there.
Maybe
I'm sure.
Get a t-shirt.
I'm sure you'll be on there by then. But
we need to start documenting this so we have a running title. But I think Heather, after today, will be two shows short of getting the blazer.
Looking forward to that.
We'll get to that. As we always say, I think Robbie Gallaty's the only one that's gotten the jacket yet. And we had to buy the extra, 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 extra large version just for his biceps.
That's right.
So in case you don't know, Heather leads the discipleship efforts at National Community Church in Washington, D.C. She oversees small groups, directs leadership development training, and serves on the weekend teaching team. And you like to hang out on Capitol Hill with the fam and do fun stuff, right?
I do. I'm married to Ryan Zimple. He's also on staff. And my four-year-old Sawyer, Elizabeth Zimple, she's got a lot of personality and is a lot of fun. So
she's awesome. We had a gathering. That's why Heather's in the room with a bunch of small groups peeps. And Heather had her little girl at the baseball game last night. And it looked like she had fun.
She did have fun. Yeah. She's got a privileged little life, you know. I'm like, did you see any other kids there, sweetie? No. You've got a sweet life.
Yeah, that's kind of how our kids are. They go everywhere with us, and yeah, they
have fun.
It's
such a great city to be raising a family in.
Oh, totally. I mean, there's so much free stuff to do. The National, the Natural History Museum just reopened their new fossil exhibit, so we spent some time there a couple weekends ago looking around at dinosaurs and fun stuff. It's great. It's great to be a kid in D.C.
Yeah, I bet.
I can't imagine. I grew up in Hopkinsville.
It's the same thing.
Yes. No difference.
Minus the monuments and the Capitol and the...
And the center of the universe kind of feel.
And fun things to do.
Even though the good people of Hopkinsville may disagree with you on that.
We do make fun of Kentucky a little. I do a little too much, but that's all right. Well, Heather is not alone. You brought a friend with you, a coworker, Amanda Seidler. Amanda, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You directly oversee the groups, right?
I do.
National Community Church.
I do.
And how
yes.
long have you been doing that?
Only for about 9 months.
Oh, wow.
So I'm still in my first year. I was on staff at a church in Pittsburgh for a long time before making my way to DC and NCC.
Very cool. We were talking before we went live here that Heather likes to gather people and bring them, and I guess you were gathered and brought.
She does. I was a victim.
Or a blessing. Yeah, anyway. So, well, welcome to the podcast. Glad
Thanks
you guys
so much.
Are here.
Thanks.
And one of the things that's interesting here at some level is that Heather, so you grew up in Louisiana, right?
I grew up in Alabama.
But went
Mobile.
To LSU.
Went
that's
to
right.
LSU,
you said
yep.
That. And you've been in D.C. for how long?
Oh, my goodness. See, this dates me. I moved to D.C. initially in 1998.
Okay, so it's been a while, but it's tough to outrun those roots. I mean, you know what I'm talking about. And
right.
Then you've got Amanda, who grew up in the vicinity of Pittsburgh and has spent most of your life in the Northeast. And I bet there's some interesting dynamic, Heather, just knowing you and how you think and where your passions are, that dynamic, the North and the South and how that works in group space with how we interact, that's got to spur some pretty
Absolutely.
Interesting conversations.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, D.C. just in general, a melting pot. I mean, it's not just North-South. You know, in our group's world, we've got, and I know you're talking about, you know, me and Amanda and our team and things like that, but we're also dealing with, like, Republican, Democrat, you know, I mean, every, you know, we're a melting pot of denominations at NCC, so it's always fun. It keeps us on our toes.
Well, that's as good a segue as any. So talk to us first about what it's like assimilating there and getting people into groups. What's that process look like? How do you measure success in that context?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think one of the advantages we actually have with being a transient city is that people are most likely to give groups a shot when they're in a life change, a season of life change. So if we can get people connected into groups quickly when they first move, it's often a very good experience for them, and we keep them in group life. When they first move, that's when they're most looking for relationships, and that's when their calendar is clear. And so if we can, we can cheat a little bit, because when people are moving to D.C., we're not automatically competing with kids' soccer schedules, with, you know, dance classes, with, you know, baseball games, things like that. So, Amanda, maybe you can talk a little bit more about some of the environments that we have and even some of the unique challenges that we face in that.
Yeah, I'd love to hear about, you know, when we think small groups, and we talk small groups a lot, you think either at the church, you know, a room at the church, or you think somebody's home. But I would think in an area like D.C. that both of those things are difficult to do sometimes. So what are some other ways that you get people to gather together?
Yeah. We've seen a lot of success with mid-sized groups and some of our efforts to really connect people as soon as they come in based on where they are in their faith or where they are in their journey of life. So a couple of those, we do run the Alpha course. And so for seekers and for newer believers, that is an incredible environment for people to ask questions and express doubts. And DC, as you can imagine, is a place where people are asking really hard questions and are not just coming in with this blind faith, but really wanting to wrestle their faith to the ground. And so Alpha becomes one of those wonderful environments. And then we also have an environment called Freshmen of the City that is specifically designed for younger 18 to 30-year-olds who are brand new to DC, brand new to the city. And it really helps to orient them to life in a new place and what it looks like to live their faith, to walk with Jesus in the midst of that.
I love the idea of that, because I'm guessing, actually I heard Heather talk about it earlier, so I'm not guessing, but it's based on the idea of when somebody goes to college in their freshman year and they're trying to figure out everything. My daughter just started college a couple of years ago, and her freshman year was like, oh, so she took U 101. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically what you're doing, is you're introducing, are you introducing them to the city life as well as what it looks like to be, you know, in groups?
And we've got fun things built in. They do scavenger hunts. They've got a Facebook group where they share some of the really unique things that are going on in D.C. Heather mentioned there's just a ton of free stuff, but you've got to know about it and you've got to find it. And so they really explore that together as a group and with their mentors. So a lot of the mentors who serve as group leaders are people who are experienced, who know the city, and who just care about bringing people along with them in those experiences. Yeah.
So everyone has a basic understanding of what we mean by small group. And then large group, of course, we know, but not everybody is going to understand to the fullest extent what a mid-sized group is. How do you guys unpack that? What does that look like at NCC?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for us, they are groups that are probably between 50 and 200 people.
Wow.
We often, you know, meet in one of our locations, which might be a theater or a coffee house. But then we also provide small group time in the midst of that, often for people to separate off and be able to have conversations to digest what they're learning and to hopefully spark some relationships too.
Now, is the goal for a mid-sized group to eventually become small groups? Do you want to spin them out, or is it okay for them to stay as a group of 100 and have small group experiences within that?
Yeah, they're typically short-term, so they often last the course of a semester, which might be 8 weeks long or 12 weeks long, and usually we love for those groups. We love to see them actually turn into a small group that ends up meeting on their own.
So it sounds like what they do, Chris, is they maximize the anonymity that you get with the mid-sized group and then hopefully gravitate using the context of that mid-sized to the small group. So is it fair to say it's intermediate?
Yeah, I would say that. And I also think they are often content driven. So people end up being intrigued about this opportunity because of what we're talking about, whether it's understanding the story of Scripture or getting oriented to life in a new city or understanding the foundations of their faith and how that might interact with where they work or yeah.
Which makes it easy, like the marketing and promotion a little bit easier to do. So
yeah,
it's a unique content-driven gathering.
Yeah, and along with that, it means that we can get some of our best communicators and teachers mm-hmm. to be on the platform and to do that teaching. And then our best facilitators or people that have been in the city for a long time that we just know you would make great mentors, but they might not want to do, you know, a small group in their home and come up with the content and figure out what the curriculum's going to be. They're just there to show up and then facilitate conversation about the teaching that's happened mm-hmm. and love on these young people and just be a guide to them in the city while they're there.
Okay, so you have live teaching as a part of this, and then they take that and they break it down
right.
and talk about it. Okay, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. Talk about, do you guys do workplace type groups? Has that been successful for you? I'm thinking in D.C., that's maybe something that can happen.
Yeah, one of my favorites is when we have groups that are meeting together on Capitol Hill. A lot of people don't know this, but Capitol Hill is run by 20-somethings. It's a little bit scary, but our government
is run by
20-somethings that have the time and the energy and the insanity to actually throw their life into that. And so we've got a group. It's called For Such a Time as This, taken out of Esther. And it's Capitol Hill staffers. It's House staffers, Senate staffers, many of them at kind of a mid-level of a legislative assistant or legislative correspondent or below that. And from across the aisle, and they love one another, they pray for one another, they seek to understand one another and listen to one another. A few years ago, in fact, that group has been lasting for a long time. You know, obviously the people in it have changed over time, the leadership has changed, but the group itself has been in existence for a while. And several years ago, they decided they were going to listen to all the presidential debates together. And the leader of that group said, you know, she learned something really interesting, that if I can pray for someone on the other side of the aisle and genuinely love them at 7 a.m. at a coffee house, that doesn't have to change when I go into my office 2 hours later. And I'm just excited. I think that we can make a real difference. I believe that government is a God-given domain of society. I think that there's something of God's character that's reflected in government politics. I'm very proud of our NCCers, kids at our church that are involved in that world. But if we can train them to be people that honor one another and walk in humility and seek the voice of God in the decisions they make on a daily basis, I just get excited about the direction of our future, of our nation. And I want to disciple the young people that are in those positions. And then we've got other things as well. We did a theology in the real world where we talked about how you apply theology in your workplace, whether that's in politics or science or arts and media. So we have a number of environments that are either directed at helping people connect their work and their faith, or are actually meeting in the workplace itself.
Mm. So you guys get, and Heather, I know you do, and Amanda, I assume you do as well. You guys get out and about quite a bit. Heather, you have how many books out? in print now?
I've got there's Sacred Roads, which I did with you guys a long time ago. Yeah. I'm sure you can still find that somewhere. And then a couple books, Community is Messy. The newest one is Big Change Small Groups.
Yeah.
Which is for the small group leader.
So DC, I've been there a few times. You guys live there, Chris. I'm sure you've been in and out of there. Mm-hmm. It is, in terms of Americana, it's a little unique. I mean, there's quite a few big cities, and they would have a lot of things in common. But D.C. and how the bleed between social interactions and life and work because of the proximity of where most people live is a little different. As you guys are out and talking to people and receiving feedback, and I'm sure you're asked all kinds of questions, how applicable are some of the things that you guys are learning, or how do you counsel other group leaders and other churches to learn from what you guys have learned?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, the first thing I always say is, you know, do not take what we're doing and drop it into your world, because you never want to take a system that was designed specifically for another demographic, for another culture, for another church, and try to make it work in your unique location. I think there are principles that are transferable. I think that there are some, some systems that might be able to be tweaked. But two things I know about myself. One, we designed a system specifically with DC in mind and its quirkiness and its uniqueness. Number two, I know that our system does not work nearly as well as I make it sound. and that's not because I'm trying to be manipulative or deceitful or anything like that. I get excited about, you know, as I think all of us do that work in group life, we get excited about the things that we have discovered, and we get excited about the potential of what we have created. But the reality is, I think all of us, when we talk about our systems, our structures, our strategies, they're not working as well as we sometimes make them sound.
That's helpful to hear, because you get the best of the best when you go to conferences, and you know every speaker talks like their thing's the best.
Oh, totally.
And
absolutely.
It works perfectly. Oh, yeah. And so absolutely. To hear that you say that, you know what, it sounds a lot better than it actually is. That's refreshing.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, in my first book, Community is Messy, it was a book about how we do groups at NCC. And I knew that, like, give this thing a 6 months and some of these chapters aren't even going to be relevant anymore. And so I actually asked the publisher if I could have two people on my team provide color commentary through the book. To keep me honest, to give different perspectives when needed, and also to say, hey, this doesn't quite work maybe the way that you know, we want it to work right now. And so I thought that was a healthy exercise. And I mean, Amanda, now so many things even from there are changed, mm-hmm. because things move and things evolve. And I think you've got to not only develop a system that works in your unique environment and culture, but be constantly reevaluating that, because culture is changing. That's one thing that, you know, I mean, in D.C., the culture changes so quickly. Mm. I mean, every 2 to 4 years, it's changing. But I think that's true anywhere you go. And so I think that is one translatable principle, to reevaluate your language, your structures, your systems and strategies, and make sure that it's still relevant and accessible.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. So what counsel would you give to a church leader that wanted to launch these, you know, a non-traditional group like what you guys foster there?
Yeah, I think that the first thing you have to do is make sure it's rooted biblically and in good theology. I mean, don't just say, oh, this is working for another church, so let's go do that.
Read this book.
Yeah. Let's go find a model that works, you know. So when we decided that we wanted to launch, for instance, interest-based groups, I really dug deep. And I realized, actually, you know, Jesus taught at synagogues, but he also taught at wells. Mm. And so I think the traditional Bible study is the more traditional synagogue style small group. What happened at the well, Jesus taught there also. And sometimes his most transformational moments happened out in real life as he was connecting with people in their workplaces or in the places that they lived, the places that they played. Mm. So I would say, you know, if you're going to launch something like interest-based groups or workplace-based groups, like, root that in a biblical theological framework.
That's good.
Cast vision for it. Like, you're going to have to – I mean, the first question is always going to be, you know, we have a lot of people that are getting baptized out of a volleyball group. Well, when you first say, hey, we're gonna start a volleyball small group, the first question is going to be like, what makes that a small group? You know, you can go join a volleyball team, you know, down at the gym down the road. So cast vision for why this can be a disciple-making environment. And then I think thirdly – and this might be the most important, is begin to capture and share stories of life change that are coming out of those groups, because it ignites the imagination for leaders to see what could happen in an interest-based group or a workspace group. And it also puts skin on the theology and the biblical framework that you've constructed for it.
One of the things I've always appreciated about NCC is one of your core values is everything's an experiment. And it feels like that frees you up to kind of experiment and see what's working and what's not working. Is that a helpful thing as you think about non-traditional groups?
Yeah. And I think, too, I mean, to add to that, there is something about not creating these groups out of thin air, but really figuring out and discerning where your people are, both where your congregation is, but also where your leaders are. Because I think some of these interest-based groups, the very best ones that we have are the ones that are birthed out of the places of passion and enthusiasm and calling that some of our leaders feel towards a certain people group or towards somewhere that they're already serving or somewhere that they're already working. So I think there's an element of it that you have to figure out as a leader of leaders, how do I leverage who my people already are and step into that, as opposed to saying, well, NCC has a volleyball group, let's start one too.
Right. You know, like, here's the box, you fit into it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
find definitely. Out what their passions are. Yeah. That's good. Heather, you had some language behind that. You said you didn't like to call them free market groups. You call it, what was it you said?
We just want people to get a vision from God, run with it.
Vision from
we
God.
We want to figure out how has God uniquely wired you to make disciples? Where's your tribe? What are you passionate about? And how can you leverage that for an opportunity to build connection and then help people take one step further in their faith?
That's good.
Amanda, what wisdom? I mean, is it just a matter of paying attention and being around people and intentionally developing relationships in terms of finding those people and uncovering where those hot spots are? Or have you, and Heather, have you picked up on some other tricks, if you will, about how to move from A to B there?
Yeah, I certainly think it's a little bit of both. We did something really interesting with a group of leaders over this past year. We designed a workshop that we brought in some of our leaders and had them focus on purpose. And we took them through a series of exercises where they got to look at really figuring out, for my small group, for this particular semester, for this particular season, what is my purpose statement? What is the goal that we are going after? And help them begin to pray into that and put shape and details around that. Some of the things that we had our leaders do was, or we asked our leaders to do was, figure out a story of success that you want to see in 12 weeks or in 24 weeks, and what does it look like to reverse engineer that? What are the things that you could step into as a leader to invest in the life of someone to see that story take place? And it was just a really interesting experience of the leaders being able to put some handles around that idea of getting a vision from God and going for it. So I think it's knowing where your people are, but it's also walking them through the process and in helping them to envision the end result and the goal of what they're going after.
Chris, that felt a little bit like a mic drop moment.
It did. I know. I think we're done. We're going to have...
Let's go wrap it up.
We're going to have an
altar
call.
Let's go wrap it up, guys.
Altar call and offering at this point. That was real. I do have one more question, and this is for both of you guys. And this is kind of a life thing, and if you don't want to answer this, you're fine. But what single decision from your time in leadership, if given the chance, would you change?
Ooh, a second mic drop, maybe.
Yeah. Well, single—that's the challenging part of the question. So I've got a few.
Probably coming on this podcast at this point.
there's one that has really shaped, I think, the way that I lead. Several years ago, I had an idea of doing kind of what we now call an alignment series with all of our groups, basically taking all of our small groups, aligning their discussion around what was going to be happening, on a Sunday morning in the message. I mean, it's similar to a campaign that Saddleback might do, something like that. But I was really excited about it. We were going to take all of our small groups and basically try to turn them into short-term missions teams, looking around the D.C. area and asking the question, who is my neighbor? How do I love them? It was great, but it was all in my head. And I remember, I was a young leader, and I thought, I can get up on the platform and cast this vision, and everybody's going to come running. Mm-hmm. And it was the opposite. It was like, wait, what does this mean for my group? This makes no sense. I'm doing a volleyball group. And I learned that that your ability to cast a vision is not nearly as powerful as your potential to mobilize a team of people. Mm-hmm. And so I realized I need lots of people at the table. I need to collaborate. I will never again go before a bunch of leaders and cast a lot of vision that I haven't invited people to speak into. So that's one. I mean, that was you know, probably 10, 12 years ago. And that's one thing that I would change, but at the same time, that lesson was so valuable to learn that...
Yeah, you grew out of that.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. What about you, Amanda?
Man, I would say the same thing. I think identifying a single decision feels really hard for me, but there's a pattern that I have seen in my own leadership that if I could change, I would change in a heartbeat. So if people are familiar with the Enneagram, there's a hot debate around whether I'm a 9 with a 1 wing or a 1 with a 9 wing. But it leads to, you know, 9s are all about peacekeeping. And so I tend to be a little bit of a people pleaser. And 1s are all about perfection. And so for me, those two things coming together, I think, make it really easy for me to not act when I need to act and not move forward when I need to move forward. And I've just learned over the years, it's so much easier to course correct once you've stepped out, even if that means stepping out in faith, and have other people step in and help course correct with you, as opposed to sitting back and waiting till you have the very perfect solution. So I think that for me is just step out, be bold,
yeah.
Understand that the answer will come in time.
That's good.
And in that, Amanda and I make a great team, because obviously I'm the one that's going to jump out ahead and maybe go a little too fast, a little too far, and Amanda's going to pull me back where I need to be pulled back, and then I'm able to kind of spur her where I need to spur. And that's just, I mean, again, the beauty of, I don't think we should ever do any of this alone.
Yeah.
Find your gaps, find your weaknesses, and then bring people around you to fill those in.
That's good.
That's a great question, Chris.
What are you, Heather, on the Enneagram?
I'm a 7 with an 8 wing.
7 with an 8 wing. Okay. Yep.
So I want to do all the things right now, and you've got to do them with me.
And move on to the next one when you're tired of it.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. All right. So we want to highlight one of the other podcasts on the Lifeway Leadership Network. Brian, have you listened to the New Church's Q&A?
Yes, I sure have.
Well, that's good. It's hosted by Daniel Lim and Ed Stetzer and Todd Atkins.
And Todd, that's right.
And they've covered such topics like the temptations of a permanent location, how to start a leadership pipeline in your church, and what happens when a megachurch moves into your neighborhood. So just look up New Churches, 2 words, on your favorite podcasting app and subscribe today.
And speaking of subscribing, please, anywhere that you listen to podcasts, we would love to see a comment or a rating. We do look at those things, and we love to pick up future show topics there. So iTunes, where else do you listen to podcasts? I guess I've got an app on my phone. That's the only one I know.
Spotify,
of course.
Google Play. Yep.
Wow, there are others.
I
had no idea.
Yes.
Appreciate everyone being with us. Heather, Amanda, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
Thank y'all so much.
Yeah,
and we will keep working
us.
On that jacket. Amanda, you've got
okay,
some shows to go.
Four more to go.
That's right. Look forward to being with everyone next time. Thanks for joining us on the Group Answers Podcast Show.